Okay, all right, we're going to start. First of all, thank you and welcome to Build. It's our first session. My name is Andrew Klinik. I'm the group program manager for the app model team and the developer tool, the developer platform part of Windows. I'm so excited to be here. We've been working on this for, it seems like forever, but to finally have a really universal Windows platform and introducing what the app model can do. So on behalf of the app model team, who a lot of them are here, I'm super excited to be telling you about this. Couple of things. App model team's pretty competitive. We have an internal thing, is like who gets the best score. I, again, not proud. So like if you like it, let us know. Follow us on Twitter, Andrew Klinik. So what's our agenda? First of all, who is this guy? We can't put photos in the book. Microsoft kindly gives us pictures of representative developers. Apparently, we all dress really well. They have good hair. And this guy, he is so excited to be here. So first of all, why do we need an app model? And then what the heck is this app model? And go through that. And because I like this guy so much, here he is again, look. Why do we need an app model? He looks pretty, he's not quite sure. And it's pretty important to think about why we need an app model. Because it makes the clicker work. It goes backwards. Well, this is why we're not shipping, clearly. So, all right, there we go. All right. So why do we need an app model? And Windows has never really had a definition of what an app is. You kind of know what it is when you see it, but nobody can really put their finger on what it is. And we basically started with an XE, but what about how you install it? Well, yeah, you know, there's lots of different ways. I've been at Microsoft 20 years, and I'm responsible for some of them, and I apologize for that. How do you store state? You know, how long does your app run for? Now, traditionally in Windows, that's not really been a problem. But as we're going, you know, it's universal now, and we're running from IoT through to phones, through to HoloLenses, how long does a holograph need to run for? It's important things. And how do you integrate with the OS? How do you integrate with your applications? And then finally, what can your app do? So the app model provides answers to these questions. Hopefully you'll like our answers. So what is the UWP Windows App Model? Well, it defines the app lifecycle and is unified across all of the Windows devices. You saw all the great demos today. You're probably all signed up so you can go build your hologram. But it's important that it be able to scale from a little Raspberry Pi 2 all the way up through a HoloLens, an Xbox, and a PC. And we want to do it in such a way that we're not taking the lowest common denominator. If all you could do was run essentially what you could run on an IoT device on a PC, you're not going to be pretty happy. You're not going to be happy. You're not going to be able to build the applications you want to be able to do. So we want to provide an app model that scales with what you want to be able to do. If you want it to run on all those devices, then at some point you have to make a trade-off. It's like, okay, well, shoot, if I'm going to run on a phone, then there's only so much memory that's available to me there. But it wouldn't be great if I was running on a PC or a high-end phone. You know, Joe was showing the Continuum. Those phones are pretty cool. They can do amazing things. Like, if I have a 2 or 3 gig phone, then I should be able to, my app should be able to scale up and do whatever it needs to do on that, yet also go down to run on the 512 megabyte phone. We like to think of the app model as the kind of cradle to grave team. We install you, we run you, and, you know, eventually you'll get uninstalled. Now, hopefully that doesn't happen that often, but, you know, it's important that you be able to do that. And one of the key things that we all forget how difficult it is to do is being able to update your application. You know, we've had ways to install applications, we've had ways to uninstall them, but we've all had that update experience. It's like, well, do you want to restart your machine so you can update this program? Well, frankly, no, never. I never want to restart my machine. So how can we be able to update? And especially as we're thinking about distributing these apps from the store, I want that store to auto-update. I want to be kept up to date. I don't want to wake up in the morning, turn on my PC, and it's waiting with a USE prompt saying, well, hey, you know, I want to update this app. That's the last thing you want to do when you get up in the morning. So our app model is inclusive of all apps that run on Windows. We have universal Windows apps, and that's really, you know, that's where we're going. That's the future. And clearly, we need to be able to do that. But we have to run existing applications. We have to be able to run phone apps. We have to run Windows 8.1 apps, Windows 8 apps. But we also have to run classic Windows apps. Now, what in the heck are classic Windows apps? Now, you and I probably know those as Win32 apps. You might know them as WPF. You might know them as WinForms, the .NET app. But we tried to come up with a term that kind of encompassed all those applications and really kind of celebrated the greatness that got us, many of us here, why, you know, how we started our career. But frankly, you know, the 60 million programs that are out there, apps that are out there on Windows today. So we're classing those as classic Windows apps. And you know, Terry showed this a little bit today, but we're introducing Project Centennial. And Project Centennial is the ability for you to convert your classic Windows app, written whatever you want, and we're so excited about it, we even created a Twitter tag for it. So CW apps, I did search, there was no CW apps tag. Some of the original ones were taken by things we weren't so keen on, so to universal Windows apps. What now? This guy is so excited, he bought his dog. This developer, he just can hardly contain his excitement. The dog looks a little worried, it must be said. But so when we think about Project Centennial and thinking about how do we bring those Windows apps and how do we bring them kind of kicking and screaming into the 21st century so they don't screw up your machine. So really, it comes down to defining an app model for classic Windows apps. Until now, there really has been no definition of an app on Windows. I think Bill Gates once bet somebody a considerable amount of money is that they couldn't define what a Windows app was. And frankly, I think he still has the money. So there's been lots of attempts to do it, but never a systemic definition. And so that's what Project Centennial sets out to do, to enable you to run your applications. And you'll have to make some code changes, but in many cases, hardly any code changes at all. And I'll go over that in a second, to bring your application into the universal Windows platform so you can distribute it via the store, you can distribute it via the mechanisms you have today. So, but why now? Why do we need that model for desktop today? In reality, it's Windows rot. We've all experienced it. We've all been on that technical support call to a family member. It's like, I didn't do anything, and my PC doesn't work now. And I've got like 12 toolbars in IE, and I didn't do anything. It just showed up. Now, maybe they just showed up, but probably they installed an application that kind of changed in an installer. We've all done that. They downloaded something from, you know, some of the websites where there's like 16 buttons that say download, and none of them to download the app you're trying to get. So think about the experience. It's pretty awful from a user perspective. But when you start installing the application, assume it's not chaining in some malware or something terrible. Even if the app is trying to do the right thing, the vast majority of Windows rot, and like, why is my PC slowing down? I installed a couple of applications, I updated them, all of a sudden my PC is running, you know, takes 20 seconds longer to start up. And I'm not even running any apps. It's because of registry growth and fragmentation. Think about how many registry entries in each key local machine you write. You kind of have to. And frankly, you know, being here for 20 years is partly our fault. You know, we kind of told you had to write the each key local machine. Well, it turns out each key local machine is loaded up as soon as is loaded into memory when your PC boots. So your PC boot time is, you know, a lot of it comes down to how big is each key local machine. As the registry gets bigger and bigger, it becomes more difficult and it becomes slower. And then finally, how many of you have written uninstallers or tried to uninstall your app? How many of you have managed to do it 100% of the time? It is almost impossible to do. Doesn't matter how hard you try. You try really, really hard. And you know, frankly, there are some apps there that really don't try that hard to uninstall. But even if you are trying to do the right thing, it's darn difficult to do. And then finally, MSI allows custom actions. And you know, this is where my past actions come back to haunt me, because I used to be the JavaScript PM in IE4 long, long time ago. And I was like, hey, MSI guys, wouldn't it be great if you put script in the MSI? because like I want script everywhere. Well, turns out that was a bad idea, and it was my, you know, so I get to fix that. So, you know, having executable codes in the setup, like, nobody wants that. Nobody expects. So you're trying to install an app, and it starts just messing with your machine and chaining MSIs. And as a result, your PC just accretes more and more in the registry, and hence you get rot. So what does Centennial bring? What's the app model? What does it bring? The primary thing for you to think about is that AppX is now our deployment model. We're investing all of our efforts into making AppX the ultimate installer across the Windows ecosystem. So we're essentially putting MSI on notice. MSI isn't going to go away. We want you to move to AppX. We're investing in AppX to provide the features that you're going to want to ensure that you can install these applications and you can update them. So AppX, frankly, provides a better way to install, uninstall, and update. We're going to isolate the registry and disk access. Now, I've been following Twitter this morning, and it's like, oh, my Win32 app's going to run in the sandbox. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be super slow. I think fake Johnny Ive thanked us for copying Apple. Turns out we're not copying Apple. We're not running your app in the sandbox. What we're doing is protecting your application essentially from itself. So if you write to HK local machine, then that code's still going to run, but that your registry keys won't actually make it into HK local machine. They'll be stored in an application hive specific to you, such that when we get to uninstall, rather than have to go find all those registry settings across the entirety of the registry, and we know that's never going to work 100%, we just go and take your hive and just delete it. So from your code doesn't have to change. But what this means, it makes it easy for us to update those applications, install them, and uninstall them. It enforces the app model policy, and I'll get onto that in a second. The other thing that it provides is once you start building an AppX, there is a whole slew of new features available to the Universal Windows platform, and I'll be talking about that a little later, that brings a whole new set of capabilities, like integrating with Cortana, doing background audio maybe in a better way. And it's important that you be able to take advantage of that from your Windows app. So once you come in AppX, then heck, you can put a background task in that if you want to, and go ahead. You can start integrating with that. So it's going to help you take advantage of the new Universal Windows platform without you having to change all your code. So you can bring your code along when it makes sense to you. So what is the app model policy? So yeah, where's the catch? That's typically what I get. It's like, okay, we're going to go do this, but like, there's got to be a catch somewhere. So your app, it can call all the APIs that it does today. We're not going to stop you calling any of those APIs. It has the existing desktop app lifecycle. If your app runs forever, it will continue to run forever. So in many respects, if your app is essentially just an XE, then you shouldn't really have to change anything. But what we're not going to allow and with AppX installs are things like system components, like specifically services and drivers. When you install those, it becomes almost impossible to update those. How many of us have trying to update a driver without a reboot? I mean, we've been trying for a long time to get that to work. But in reality, we know that it won't work in terms of being able to make it easy to write a driver and be able to update it. But we also know once you're running as a driver, it doesn't matter how much we isolate you from the registry. You've got full access to the machine. You're in the kernel, potentially, at that point. That is not what we want applications to be doing. That's not to say that you can't take advantage of drivers, but the way that you get drivers is from Windows Update. Windows Update knows how to roll back drivers. The rollback process for a driver is much more complicated and, frankly, will have a huge impact on your machine. And rather than trying to make AppX the be-all and end-all and trying to deliver all different types of components, we're saying, look, Windows Update knows how to deal with drivers. It knows how to deal with services. Let it do that. But for applications, we're going to allow those to run. We're just not going to deliver services and drivers from that. Second one, and this is frankly the biggest, perhaps this should be the first, is that no admin elevation. The last thing a user ever wanted, frankly, was to answer the UAC prompt. Frankly, maybe the whole world didn't want to answer the UAC prompt. But think about if you're going to put these apps in the store, and the store updates at 3 o'clock in the morning or whenever is the right time to go do that, if it has to ask for UAC privileges, it's awful at that point. One, the user experience is not going to auto-update. But frankly, once you have admin access, then you know you can kind of do everything you want to the device. So by not elevating to admin, you get to install on a per-user basis. It makes it a lot easier to install and uninstall your application. Now, the great thing about AppX is if you have more than one user on the machine, if they've installed your application and the second user logs in, then all it's going to do is basically just register your application. It doesn't have to download it all again. We have single instancing such that it's going to be able to take advantage of that. So you get all the benefits without the downsides of having to do admin privileges. The other thing we're not going to allow, because we're doing this registry isolation, is in-process extensibility. So some examples of that. If your application relies on other applications registering with it for extensibilities, then at the moment, this year, those other applications or add-ins can't come from the store. You can still do them. You can still load them in your application. And that's great. And we very much, you know, we showed Photoshop. Add-ins are pretty darn important to Photoshop. We intend to make that available later on. It's just not going to be available this year. But if your application installs browser helper objects, heaven help us if it does, but then those won't work. You can try and register them, but they're going to register in the registry, what you think is the registry, but because we isolate it and write it somewhere else, Internet Explorer is not going to see that your application is has registered for that. We believe this is a step forward for users. We want to make applications isolated. We want to make sure that they're single units, they're easily updated and maintained. It will mean that people will feel a lot more happy and a lot more willing to install your application because they kind of know what's going to happen when they install from an AppX. It's going to install. They should never have to regret installing your application. They might not like your app. They might get some buyer's regret. They don't like it. But if they don't like it, they uninstall, and they're in exactly the same spot as they were before. And this is vital. So this is why we're denying these currently to ensure that. So tomorrow there's an in-depth session for a whole hour with John Sheehan, who's our distinguished engineer. He's around here somewhere. We'll go into this in much more detail. So that's Project Centennial, which is like bringing classic Windows apps into AppX. But what about getting your app? What about getting a clicker that works? All right, there we go. Okay, so you know, our user promises to never regret installing an application. But where do I get my application from? Well, look, we still want the store to be the default place to do that. From a consumer perspective, it's just an easier, more trustworthy place, and the experience is significantly better. They don't get adverts in trying to get them to download all manner of stuff. They know that if they install something from the app store, then they're not going to regret installing the app. But we also realized that you want to have flexible deployment. You know, the PC didn't get to where it was by having a store and locking you down from installing applications. So we're going to enable you to do flexible deployment so that you can take advantage of that. You can sideload your applications onto your PC, onto your phone. And then finally, in the AppX improvements, and there's a whole session on the AppX improvements, we realize, and especially as universal apps become more and more complex, games are starting to get huge, and also with classic Windows apps, the current install size, the limit we have is too small. So in Windows 10, we're supporting AppX packages that are greater than 150 gigabytes. Now, it might take a while to download that, but the fact is you can install that and take advantage of that. So you can start building great games that really start taking advantage of that. Or frankly, you know, Photoshop is a 2 gigabyte AppX that Terry showed this morning. Being able to do that is really important that we can assure you to do that. Now, getting your applications, that's a great thing, but you have to be able to develop them. And we got a lot of feedback about our developer unlock situation. And the feedback was, well, you know, it kind of sucks. It was like, you know, like on phone, I got to plug it into my PC, and then I got to sign in with my MSA, and you know, I didn't really want to have to do that, and certainly if you're thinking of a lab environment. And I think there was, you know, our survey said that precisely zero developers love that prompt in Visual Studio for Windows development. It's like, well, hey, I don't know if I can trust you after a month. Let's reestablish your trust. So in Windows 10, we're cutting the cord. Developer unlock now is just a setting on the device. It's just a control panel. Here's the PC control panel. Now, the settings app is actually a universal app. So, hey, look. It runs on phone too. There it is. So the key thing here, it's just a settings app to go do. So if you want to go unlock your phone now, you just go to settings and unlock it. Same on the PC. It's a registry key. So for enterprise customers, they can control that. They can ACL that registry key so that nobody can set it if they don't want their devices to be dev unlocked, and that makes sense. The enterprises should be able to control that. If you flip that, oh, and also on phone, you debugging now. You don't have to do debugging over USB. You can do debugging over Wi-Fi. So you can now completely cut the cord from a phone perspective. It's super important in a lab environment so you can do all this stuff. There are some limits on phone, is that once you're dev unlocked, you can sideload 20 applications. And on PC, it's unlimited. Because frankly, it's unlimited for Win32 apps, so why would we provide a limit for universal apps? We want you to go to universal apps, so we don't want to make it more difficult for you to build universal apps than it is to build a WPF app. So developer unlock is a big thing for us. Now, word of caution, the build that you have didn't quite make it. So the next flight will have this. In fact, I think the control panel made it. It just doesn't do anything. So admire the UI. Now, the app model team is kind of the no pixel team, so we actually got another team to do it. If you don't like the UI, it's their fault. So, but admire the UI. Give us some feedback on that. So, as PCs are becoming, PCs are, have essentially infinite storage, or enough that people don't have to worry about it. But PCs are also becoming smaller, as are phones. And the amount of available storage is going down, certainly on the low-end tablets or low-end, that little HP Steam machine. It has, 16 gigs. It doesn't have much. So be able to install your applications on removable storage is a key thing for us to be able to do. And frankly, pretty darn difficult to do IoT without removable storage. That Raspberry Pi doesn't really come with anything without your SD card. So we're going to enable you to install universal apps from APEX onto removable storage. Now, the user will be able to choose from that from within the store. Because if you think about the APEX installation, it doesn't give you any UI during that. So user gets to set the default. It's like, look, I want all my apps to go to SD card. And then they can also move them. And this is the kind of classic vacation thing. You got your phone, and you want to start taking photos, and you run out of space. So you're like, okay, well, I just want to move all my apps over to my SD card. And you can move that after the fact. Now, apps are enabled on removable storage by default, but because we want the most apps to be available to all users at all times. But if you really, really care about it, you can turn it off. So you can opt out of that and say, look, I don't want my application to be on SD cards. The apps, when they're on the SD card, are encrypted. So I take out the SD card and give it to Akhil, he's not going to be able to go use that application because it's encrypted to my device. So, and we also know if you take the SD card, put it in the PC, then all bets are off, right? You can do it. So it is encrypted. It's also encrypted to ensure isolation between applications. Now we enable isolation on device and on PC using NTFS. That's great. We know that SD cards. I mean, yes, you can format them as NTFS, but frankly, nobody does because the whole point you want to put it somewhere else. So if it's FAT or XFAT, then I can't ACL that. So we use encryption such that even if application A managed to get to application B's folder, all it's going to find is encrypted data, and it's encrypted on a per-app basis, on a per-machine basis, so it won't be able to go read it. So that's getting your applications. But what can your applications do? And typically, we think of this as multitasking. Now, precisely, it's not exactly multitasking. But if you ask users, and frankly, most developers, it's, you know, what can I do, and how can my application run? Now, one key thing that we've done in the Universal Windows platform is introduce resource management across the board. Now, those of you who are phone developers will understand what resource management is. But on the resource management essentially says, well, look, I'm going to say, like, if I'm running on a 512 meg device, then, you know, you get 180 megs maximum so that we can guarantee the experience, so your app can run. And we will resource manage you so that if you go above that, we'll unload you. We will keep track of you from that perspective. Resource management also tracks resources. It's like, you don't want two apps trying to access the camera at one time. That's never going to end up well. So it manages those resources, but primarily resource management is about battery and memory. And how do we provide an efficient system such that the user experience of the device is maintained at a steady state and the fluidness that's available that people expect, and also enable your applications to run. And we're scaling this now, such that we scale from 180 megs on a 512 meg phone. If I'm a 3 gig phone or a 4 gig or 16 gig PC, then you expect your memory caps to expand. If I'm plugged in all the time, then heck, I don't care about battery. You know, if you're building an app that is primarily for an IoT or primarily for a plugged-in desktop, then you probably don't much care about power. So, but again, you can take advantage of that and find out what's going on. And there's a whole session actually pre-recorded from that from one of the guys on my team, Andrew Whitechapel, about exactly what that means to you. And you know, he has the mother of all spreadsheets, which is kind of three-dimensional chess of how all this works. But it's a key thing for you to consider. So once you have this memory control, and once you know what you can do, it's like, well, what can I do from an application? How can I run in the background? And we're introducing in the UWP extended executions for foreground applications. Now, there's a whole session about this, but I kind of summarize this in two kind of main scenarios about how you'd run your applications. Think about it. Let me finish saving my file. Joe Belfiore showed Excel up on running on a phone, running on a screen. Lots of cool stuff there. Now, the way that Excel runs on the phone is it's continually saving your spreadsheet. There is no file save. It's always saving up to OneDrive or to Dropbox or wherever you chose to put it. Well, if you have a huge spreadsheet and you get a text message and you flip to that text message, then Excel is going to give us, prior to this, would get suspended, which means you're going to lose your edits. So what we're introducing is the ability for your app to ask for more time to complete what it's doing. So this is across the board that anybody can do that. And then the final one is what I call the kind of turn-by-turn navigation scenario, which obviously is not just for that. But if you think about, you know, the Maps app, when it's going to, you know, I start a route, I know it's going to go in the background. The Maps app knows that it's going to go in the background. And it's going to essentially ask, look, I want to keep running essentially forever. But, you know, trust me, I'll stop running when I don't need to. And there, essentially, your app is telling the operating system when it starts up, saying, look, I want to be able to run in the background. So we're enabling this such that your applications can start doing this. Now, how many applications can run for how long will depend on the resources that are available on your device. On a 512 megabyte device or an IoT, then that might not be very long at all. But if you're running on a high-end phone or a tablet or a PC, then you're going to get a lot more resources and a lot more kind of guarantees of what's going to be able to run. And then finally, we're really expanding triggers, such that triggers are great in terms of they run your code when it needs to. So geofencing is a classic example, or Bluetooth beacons, which there's a session on later this week. is that, you know, if I care about, I want to do something when I get home, I don't want my app running the whole time on the off chance that I might be home. So I just set up a geofence trigger. When that geofence is triggered, it actually starts up a background task for my application. So my app runs when it needs to. So the goal here is to provide a balance such that users get the experience that they want. They think it's multitasking, when in reality, it's not. We're providing real enough multitasking such that users can get that. Now, on higher-end devices, you get fuller multitasking. You can go ahead and do that. But we need to be able to scale down to lower devices. Now, it turns out if you talk to users, what they really think about multitasking is the app resume policy. You talk to a user, if something, when they tap on the tile, if it comes back immediately, that pretty much is running in the background. That is their definition. Because frankly, how do you know if the app is running in the background? So in the Universal Windows platform, we're introducing this app resume policy so that all applications will resume by default. Such that if you switch away from your application, we will suspend it away. And if there's still memory to keep it in memory, then it's not running, it's suspended. Then whenever you launch back into that application, it will resume. Now, all Windows Phone 8.1 applications and 8.0 and 8.1 desktop apps also had this resume policy. So it's actually not a new experience. We're just bringing it and making it the default across the Universal Windows platform, with one key exception. And that's the Windows Phone 7 and 8.0 apps. They don't. We really want them to, but what we found is that from an application compatibility perspective, a lot of these applications were written assuming that they would always get a fresh instance. So, and we found through testing, it's like, well, we turned on this policy and there was, you know, a lot of the applications crashed or didn't work the way they wanted to. So if you have a Windows Phone 7 or 8.0 app, if you upgrade to UWP, then this is something you need to think about, thinking about how your application is going to be resuming all the time. Now, there's implications there, thinking about how you're going to load state and save state. But you really have to think about how your application is going to get used. So you think about this, there's basically, if you're always going to be resumed, if you've only got a single entry point from a live tile, so you don't have a notification, you don't have secondary tiles, you don't have to worry about people re-entering your app. But there are essentially two models for this. You can always resume the experience, and I would say the browser on phone or Project Spartan, if you use this, your expectation for the browser is when you go back to the browser via the browser icon, you expect it to be on the last web page you were on. You don't expect it to kind of go back to some kind of mythical home for those web pages. But for some applications, navigating back to home is pretty important. And I would say the email is a classic example of this. Is that if I tap on my inbox icon, I kind of expect it to go back to my inbox, not to the email that I was last working on. Now, frankly, it's user choice. It's your choice as an application as to which, because both of those are good models. It makes it, you get to choose. But one thing we ask you to do, if you do resume back to where you last were, provide a way for your application to get back to somewhere where the user will feel comfortable. I call this kind of back button amnesia. It's like, nobody can really remember past two or three backs. It's like, well, where the heck was I? You know, if I resume an application that I last used like 10 minutes ago, the likelihood of me knowing where I was or how to get back is pretty difficult to do. So I think the Twitter app on phone does a pretty nice job of this, has a home button, there's the hamburger, there's lots of different UI metaphors to do this. But think about when people are going to come back into your application. And the reason why you have to do that is that we're unifying the navigation model across our shells. So, you know, the back button. So today, you know, if I start an application on phone, and you know, this is Andrew's dev art, you can tell that I am not a UI designer. I tap on that thing, you know, I clip on that. Now, hopefully, you can see in the top. So I have the back button highlighted on my phone. which is always there, so when I can hit back and that will take me back to where I was. But on the desktop, when I'm running in a window, then the back button is going to be in the top left-hand corner of my app. Now, that makes more sense if I'm running with a mouse and a keyboard. I expect it to be there. Okay, so when I go back, then the key thing, it takes me back to the last screen, and that's what I expect. Now, the difference on phone is that when I hit back, and if I've reached the end of the back stack of my application, and I hit back, it's going to switch me back to the application or the start screen, whatever was before my application. Now, when I'm running in a window on a PC, that doesn't make much sense. What is the application? I don't really expect hitting back in one application to take me to another one. So the back button in Windows running in a windowed environment stops at the application. So if you hit the end of the back stack, then essentially it's going to stop going back within the application. But the phone, because usability studies have shown us that people really love the back button. Frankly, way more than we thought that they would really love the back button. They really, really love it. And they expect to be able to navigate around between applications using the back button on that. Now, one key thing, Joe showed Continuum. When I go to Continuum, we've all kind of seen it as tablet mode right now, is that once I go to tablet mode, then I will get a back button in the start bar, just like I do today on phone. So that when I'm using a tablet, like Joe showed that Lenovo tablet, I kind of expect that to sort of work kind of like a phone. So once I go into Continuum mode or into tablet mode, then I will get a back button which will work the same way as phone does in terms of it will back you between applications as well. So as you think about the navigation model, it's important to be able to think about how people are going to get to your application. There's also the task switcher, is that people could switch to your application from the task switcher. And we know that that's more of a kind of high-end user, but it's a lot easier to get to now in Windows 10. So expect that people are going to be coming to your application in multiple different ways. And think about that from a user experience perspective. So as we build these applications and people start to use your applications, being able to provide an integrated experience, be it with the operating system or their other applications, is really, really important. Now, traditionally, apps on mobile devices have been isolated. Isolated is good. It brings a lot of value in terms of, I know that if I run this app, it's not going to go mess up anything or take dependencies from other applications. But users want to get things done. And often that means integrating with the operating system, integrating with other applications. And we took a step back here and said, well, okay, we think application integration is pretty darn important. How are we going to go do this? So we looked at the web and said, well, what did the web teach us? Well, it taught us that URL-based activation brings a whole bunch of simplicity. It makes it really easy to link from application to application B. All we have to know is URL. So if I want to integrate with, Amazon, then there's just amazon.com and some ungodly length URL. But at least I can cut and paste it and just go ahead and do it. So how can I do it? If I keep it simple, then it makes it really easy for people to integrate applications. And we see that on the web today. I mean, how many websites are completely isolated and not designed to work with anybody else? And then we kind of took a look back in our history, is that, what did COM teach us? I mean, we've been doing application integration with COM and early automation since, 93. COM did a whole bunch of things, but it did teach us is that complexity kills. Is that, there's an incredible ecosystem with application integration available in COM, but at some point, it becomes too unwieldy or very difficult to manage, and people were taking less and less dependencies on each other. So we want to build a web of apps. So, and again, this guy looked really, he's looking for a web of apps. I don't know, he might be looking in the wrong spot. So a web of apps was really allowing applications to integrate using the best of the web. So we want to enable URL-based activation and communication between applications. And this is really key from a foreground to foreground perspective. If I want to make a phone call with me, or if you want to Skype me, Then I just have to type Skype colon Andrew Clinic, and magically Skype will launch, and I do a foreground to foreground, so I can get my applications to do that. And we've all seen this with Facebook uses this a lot, if the Facebook SDK, if you want to do auth with them. But one of the challenges of that is, like, I could launch a URL, but if I wanted to get a result back, then I kind of had to hack around. I had to get that application to kind of know what URL to call me back on, and it kind of involved shared secrets and a whole bunch of, frankly, stuff that, you know, I don't think anybody was proud of. It kind of worked, but not really a great way to do that. In 10, we're enabling that so you can actually get a return result. So you can, just like you can do on the web, I can call an application and it can give me a result straight back. So you can do integration with applications and provide a great user experience. And we even do go as far, if you're running in a window, then that application you called is kind of bound to your window. So the user experience feels like, look, I'm calling from application A to application B, but it's not like I'm seeing a sea of applications show up. Again, taking some of the benefits from the web and applying those to applications. Perhaps the most exciting thing, though, is foreground to background, is that, you know, integrating with other applications is great, but you kind of lose the user to another application. It might not come back. If I send somebody to Amazon, they'll probably just go off and, you know, find out what today's offer are, and they'll never come back to my app. So foreground to background enables you to integrate other people's application in, or for you to publish functionality from your app that other applications can call, but the calling application remains in the foreground. Now, frankly, this is something which we started in Windows Phone 8.1 for our Facebook and Twitter integration. Like, the people application on the phone doesn't know anything about Facebook and Twitter. It does know that there's a Facebook and Twitter application that is on the phone. So it calls out to those, and it gets a news feed, and those applications can also go and sync contacts. And what we've done is we've taken that design pattern and made it available to all applications. And, you know, we loved it so much that we really bet, and we made a big change, because frankly, we've done a good job of building a platform and not building any of our applications on it in the past, is taking a dependency on ourselves. So app-to-app and app services are used across the board. Cortana and people used app services extensively. You saw Cortana, and I'll go into that a little bit, but with, where Joe worked with Viber. Office and Skype do that. Interactive toasts enable you, they call background services such that when you type, you know, a reply in line, it just works on that. Photos for filters and lenses are using this, so that you can go and query what applications are available that support that particular service. So, for example, the Viber integration that Joe showed, what do? Well, they define an app service in the app manifest, and hopefully you can see this in the back. All I've done is defined an entry point and then an app service and say, okay, look, I'm going to expose this out. This is my background task. Other applications can call it. Now, it's your choice. You don't have to expose app services. You get to choose how much you want to expand out. And then you just register a voice command definition with Cortana. You can see here is the command send name, and you give it the syntax that Cortana understands. And then you just say, well, the target for that thing is that app service. So when Joe was saying, you know, send Terry a message with Viber that I'm going to be late, it was just calling the Viber app service in the background. So this is how you can integrate with Cortana very, very easily, just by creating a background task in your application. So we believe that the web of apps and the app-to-app and app services is really going to enable you to build much richer and deeper experiences and provide a way for users to engage with your applications more. Because frankly, if Cortana starts using your application, then your usage is going to go up. Hopefully your users will be happier that they can get to their apps easier. Cortana is not the only way that you can engage with your users, though. The most iconic thing we've had, essentially since Windows Phone first came out, is Live Tiles. Now, Live Tiles are great, and we're humbled in a certain extent how much everybody is integrating with Live Tiles. But the consistent feedback we've got is like, you know, frankly, those templates you provide to us, they're kind of useless. I can't use them. So what are you all doing? You're providing background tasks that generate pings. Now, I'm sure that the last thing that you all want to do get up in the morning is like, let me generate a ping in XAML and try and get it to run in less than 15 megabytes and hope that the user is still going to work that. So we're introducing in the UWP adaptive tile templates. Now, adaptive tile templates enable you to provide a simple XML such that you can, they extend the existing templates and give you a lot more flexibility for how you can lay out your tile. Now, this is actually difficult to talk through, so I'm going to share. This is my one demo, my one piece of UI. And my machine has locked itself. Okay, so this is an application that our team built. Matt Hittinger and our team built this. And we're going to make this available for you so that you can use it. So this essentially enables you, because one of the key challenges for Tile is like, well, how am I going to build this thing? How do I design what I want my Tile to look like? And how do I have any clue as to what it's going to look like? So here I have a really simple XML, but you know, I can go nuts here and say, well, look, you know, now I get a lot more control over how everything looks. So here's a simple calendar. Here is Matt's smiling face. Not that he's vain or anything, but puts his pictures in demos. And you know, mail. And you know, one of the great things about what we've done in this release is our first party applications are using our own platform. So you know, the mail app, you know, Outlook has some pretty strong requirements of what a tile might look like, how they want to be able to do that. You know, our money app, our finance app, is like, you know, currently to do this today, they have to generate pings, and they're either sending it down from the server or they're using a whole bunch of compute power. Well, you think about it, like, if you're sending down thousands of these pings, hundreds of thousands of these pings an hour, your bandwidth, well, bandwidth is cheap, it's not free. It's not free to the end user either. In terms of, you know, like to generate this, you'd have to generate a ping. And, you know, pings are efficient, but they're not as efficient as a piece of text. So, you know, you can drastically reduce the amount of bandwidth you have to use to be able to update your tiles. It's going to save you money. It's going to make your users a lot happier because now their data use is going to go down every month. Think about if you're a sports network and you're following I think basketball is probably the worst, right? In terms of you're sending score updates all the time and you were generating pings on the server. Think how much bandwidth that a user who's following three or four teams was using. You know, you can go from like 10, 20 meg during a game to, you know, maybe 50, 60 K. So a significant saving from that perspective. So your tiles are great. And it's a great way to engage with the users. But Action Center it was a huge hit on Windows Phone. And you know, sending notifications is the ultimate way to really connect with your users. If I want to send a message to a particular user, essentially notifications is the only way that I can actually deliver that on a per user basis. But you know, as a result, I end up with a lot of notifications. So Action Center is now coming across all of both the phone and desktop. So the same look and feel across the Windows family. It adapts to the user experience. You've all seen it on Windows 10 on the desktop. It has essentially the same behavior, but looks slightly different. But what we're doing this time is really building out the Action Center platform so that you have complete control over that. So maybe you want to be able to delete what's there. Or like one of the key requests that we got is like, well, look, I have three messages, so my live tile has a count of three. And I swipe away one of those messages. Well, one, you couldn't do that before, but now you can actually swipe away individual messages. Well, I want my count on my live tile to be in sync with Action Center, otherwise my users are going to be really confused. So we're providing the Action Center change trigger so that you can you will know when a user has changed something on Action Center. So they can swipe that away and you can do whatever you feel is the appropriate thing to do. The obvious one is keeping the live tile in Action Center in sync. But you can keep complete control. You can delete all your things. You might say, well, look, you know, after 20 notifications, maybe I just want to reduce that to saying, hey, you have 20 plus notifications rather than rather than taking up the whole action center. We believe the action center is really a great way, combined with live tiles, to really engage your users and get apps, them using your applications more and more. So that's engaging with users. The final way to engage with users is thinking about the data and the applications that they use on the device and how can you integrate with those. In the Universal Windows platform, we're introducing a common data store, which is going to give you complete access to the contacts, calendar, email, and messaging, so that you can integrate with that. Such that if you want to write your own calendar, you can go ahead and do that. If you want to be able to read from it, you can go ahead and do that. Now, obviously, the user is in control. They can turn off access to your application, and they will be asked if they want to give your app access to these stores. But it really enables you to build tighter integration. And like, for example, you know, I want to be able to, you know, if look at the way that contacts link. It's like I can write my app, write my contact store into that and automatically link such that, you know, my wife, you know, she already has Twitter, Facebook, and they all integrate into that. And if it was your application, they could integrate on that and all link together such that you get a nice experience in the people application. So, and then finally with email and messaging RT, now we realize we have to be responsible here. Look, I think we would all love to be able to send SMS messages. But we also know that there are people out there who will want to send SMS messages that, frankly, you know, not doing it for the greater good of mankind. So these are available. We're starting slow. So we're starting, and you can ask for permission on this. We are making it available, and we're frankly looking to you guys to give us feedback on that and what would be the right policy to do that. So we're not going to make the SMS store available to everybody up front. But we are enabling it, and we're starting small. And we're starting with some smaller companies, and we'll expand that over time, because we don't want, you know, SMS spam is frankly one, a royal pain, but two, can actually cost you a lot of money. So, and we don't want that to happen. We don't want to make the experience terrible. So, in summary, the Universal Windows platform. We really wanted to make it easy for all users to get all of your applications. And we really mean all of your applications. Centennial enables you to bring your existing applications and bring them to the store with very, very simple changes. We wanted to give you more flexible multitasking so you can do more with these devices. As Joe showed, you know, you now can do continuum on a phone. I want to be able to do more when I'm running in that experience. I want to have a unified navigation experience such that I don't have to think, it's like, oh, how is it going to work on a phone? How is it going to work on a PC? You can still choose to write an application that just runs on the phone, just runs on the PC. But by having a common approach, you can take advantage and concentrate on writing your application. URL-based app integration, we really believe that the web of applications is going to enable considerable new experiences. And then the store and search integration with Cortana and richer tiles and Action Center. Now, my session, this is the first session from AppModel. We actually have, this is a spectacular slide that I'll take no credit for whatsoever. But this is really kind of the map of all the, I'm really kind of the warm-up app. So Barclay on my team is providing, is like, okay, well, like, if you really want to know about APEX and deployment, if you really want to know all the intricate details, then Barclay's going to do a deep dive on that. Enterprise app distribution and navigation. Enterprise is actually going to be Ignite. So if you want to know about enterprise, then just wait till next week and watch it online. But John is here, and if you do have enterprise app distribution questions, I'm happy to take those afterwards. Navigation and windowing. In Windows 10, expanding on the information I gave you there, Robert's going to be providing that. And then Sean, who put together these slides, is really going to go into the complete app lifecycle, thinking about how does this multitasking really work? What's available? And how can you take advantage of that? And then finally, Thomas is going to be providing Shell and how that's, you know, the tiles and notifications, the Action Center. like really going into depth on that. And then finally, and quite literally finally, if you're still here on Friday afternoon, we'd be very, very happy to see you at the app services. It is the last session of Friday, so we do appreciate that. That's tough. And then the final one is Tony is going to be providing a deeper dive into user data and providing you code access to that. So we're super excited the app model. We believe it's going to be able to provide a significant impact in what you can build. And you know, we're really excited for you to be here, and we're here for the rest of the week. So thanks for showing up, and that's the end of my presentation.